is Robert Stark. I am joined here with Pilleater. Pilleater, it's great having you on the show.
Thanks for having me on, Stark. I'm a big fan of your show.
And I'm also joined here with my co-host, Alex von Goldstein.
Great to be on with you guys, and Pilleater, it's great meeting you.
Thanks very much. Have fun meeting.
Pilleater, you're a college student. You're a artist, musician, and you've been listening to the show for quite some time.
Yeah. Currently, I'm a college student, and I'll be graduating this December. And I do have plans on going to grad school, you know, possibly in Asian studies. Asian studies has always been an interest of mine. And but right now, I'm kind of in the belly of the beast of social justice warriors and kind of pretentious autistic libertarians and these arrogant, like, white girl feminists, you know, pretty much all the cartoons you would see from, you know, counter signals from Fashy Goys, you know, that Facebook cartoon website, kind of like that. You know, but right now it's really my last semester and I can't stand it. But ironically, you know, I always think it's funny that anything to do with, like, the far left loonies or, like, idiot norms has something to do with, you know, white people being in class, and there's this full of pretentious nature to it. But I always find it interesting in an Asian class, if it's a room full of Chinese or Japanese or Korean, you know, there's this kind of relief to it where I guess I would find more truth about myself, where it's not that pretentious and it's not that there's some sanity in that. And, you know, but personally, other than being a college student, just trying to survive this last semester, you know, I've been a very long internet artist, probably since I was very young, a musician, and now I'm a writer, kind of just starting up my blog. And I have many art projects online since, you know, I was a little kid. And when I was like 14, I discovered hang tie. So I do have that interest in that. I actually do some art, but I have a few art pieces of Rule 34. I mean, you could find it on Brew sites, but I won't mention my name because they were done when I was really young. So there is old erotic art online. So, but mainly I'm a YTMD user because my name, Pilleater, you know, that's not my real name. It's my YTMD name. And I've been on You're the Man Now Dog since 2008. And the Pilleater account is my main account. Supposedly by history, the name is a joke on Inkdrinker. It's another famous YTMD user, kind of a troll. But I kind of made up the name short as a joke to that. And it's kind of a reference to Dr. Mario and Akira. I use that as my mascot. But it could also ironically mean, you know, red pill, blue pill, and all this pill stuff. So I'm actually quite famous on YTMD because I originated the oh yeah, Mr. Krabs fad on YTMD. It's kind of like scream shock art when it goes, oh yeah, Mr. Krabs, and just screams through it. But it's the YTMD users, like, you know, I know them personally, Johnny Lurk, Santabot AI, Suzanne, and Milk Human, which are all very interesting YTMD, you know, D users. They were kind of the reposting this YTMD site where you cut and paste this Mr. Krabs head and you put it on a YTMD site and just make these cheesy shock arts. And I just, when I was really young, I just pulled them out really, really, really quickly. And so Pilleater is the brand name of that and kind of this troll thing I would do when I was bored. And it's fun. I actually like that. And I also trolled the YTMD audience saying both I was actually a girl, which I'm not. And even getting into a car crash, you could find that site. And I said, oh, I was in a car crash. It was on the front page for about 2 weeks, and everyone was believing it. It was much more a time of the golden age of the internet when people believed those things. And I was having fun with it. And I think, wow, I didn't know how far you can go with truth at that. But YTMD still has integrity. If you go on the website right now, there's classic users like General Fod, I know Murdar Machine, Kaysen still use the site, and Famory Guy, which all make these really strange kind of vaporwave-esque humor sites that are just funny and strange, and I'm a big fan of them. I wish they were in art galleries on TVs, but unfortunately I hear that the Max Goldberg, the main creator of YTMND, he's going to shut down the website soon. He wrote an article.
Can you explain what YTMD is to someone who's like never heard of it?
Sure, it's basically an old version of Tumblr, and it was released in 2003, 2004, and basically as Sean Connery, if you wrote in www.yourethemannowdog, Sean Connery going, you're the man now, dog, and was from Finding Forrester. And so Max, who made that site and other strange joke websites, made this engine where you can post a picture, text, and sound, and you can have that, and people just had fun with it if you had a Windows XP computer in like 2005, and everybody was on it. I still go in favorite websites of these old anime geeks that like Naruto and like bad emo music from then. And YTMD is just basically capturing that early millennial generation when they were like in their teen years and has all that medium, even the older generation too. Some of Gen X is in there, but I find YTMD very fascinating with that as its old medium, but everyone has Snapchat and Tumblr, so who cares about it? And I was the only, and when I first discovered it, I wanted to be good on YTMD and I, you know, wanted to go at it, you know? So over time I've posted over 500 YTMD sites and I have over 3000 comments and I've made $50 of sponsored websites. And, now, recently on the humor site, one of the other users, Let's A Go, who I'm friends with, just uploads cartoon porn and New Jack Swing, and I think that's pretty funny. So if you look at my new site, there's just cartoon porn and shock art. But, you know, there is classic art jokes in my earlier websites. I don't know where to go in my old YTMD sites. You might even find me rapping in some of them or just being goofy. So, I associate with YTMD.
I want to ask you, you know, you're talking about YTMD, you're the man now, dog. And, you know, this sort of golden age of the internet. And I think Robert and I, as well as yourself, came of age during this time where there was a lot more creativity online. I mean, there's plenty of creativity now, but it's sort of, you know, you have your area that you go in. Whereas, you know, in the early 2000s, there seemed to be a lot more like diversity of ideas and sort of a vibrancy. I mean, can you talk about that time?
That's kind of the era that Vaporwave came out of.
Well, I mean, Vaporwave is a bit after that. I mean, I would say that's something that came more off of Tumblr. I mean, a time that was even earlier than that.
In the early 2000s.
Yeah, where like 10-year-old kids making videos on Flash animation on Newgrounds. Like, I remember on September 11th, I went home from school and I went on Newgrounds and I saw all these insanely disturbing, weird cartoons made by like 10-year-olds of planes.
And they get blammed and they're gone forever or something. I remember that.
Yeah.
They're just gone. They're bad or something.
Well, yeah, I mean, there was this sort of bizarre, like, childish energy, and it doesn't seem to be there in the internet. It doesn't seem to be there in a lot of millennials. I mean, it's there in some of these real young kids, but I don't see it as much. Am I just old, or
go on?
Oh, just yeah. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying. Yes, YTMD still has that attitude, and they're very much young kids to whatever. Max even said he wants to shut down YTMD because you have too many crazies. I mean, there's this one crazy named Green Screen who I've been a fan of. He attacks me and trolls me, and I just think it's funny. But at the same time, his whole career on YTMD is like hurting people and stalking them. And he actually went on Santabot and Suzanne's user accounts and said, "I know where you live. I got your phone number and I got your Facebook." And these guys were scared. He didn't dox me though, but he says he has my sound file. Who cares?
So you've been listening to this show for quite some time. Can you talk about the influence it's had on you, but also like how has the show changed recently with like the new co-host, like Alex and Rabbit?
Sure. I mean, I was listening to Reason Radio Network since in high school. I remember I was in a really geeky private school where the boys were separated with the boys and the girls with the girls. And I, you know, during study hour, I would just, I think I was really into skinhead music. That was my secret passion. I like Screwdriver and No Remorse. And I was just interested for the media of that. I came across the show because some obscure Nazi reference goes on the program. But I found Stark Truth, your show, the most interesting because it was just had these interesting guests on from, I'm remembering the last time I was kind of sad when there was that, I think it was the Radish guy. He did Radish Mag for a bit. And that was like the very last program on the Stark Truth before there was the guy, Matt, went kind of cuckoo or something with Matt Parrott or something. I even remember Paul Kersey being on their lineup shows or whatever. But yeah, some of those shows, I think I even found out Jim Goad through your program when he was on Reason Radio Network with the mix of that and reading on Tacky Mag. I was really young at that time, but what really stumbles on is through Countercurrents and through other websites of that nature, but I think Countercurrents was pretty much my main blog during that 2011 year, and I kind of kept it a secret too. I mean, talking about now with The Stark Truth, I find it now, I said, as the alt-left show, pretty much I think what's happening is now that the alt-right is stable. You know, I was a part of that generation where secretly kids would go on the internet and flirt with Nazi ideology, and now it turned into the alt-right, you know, thanks to like Richard Spencer's Institutionalized and some other troll in life things, you know. And so I think The Stark Truth is now this alt-left show because it still flirts with those radical fringes of the internet, but at the same time, there's some light on it. So I think the alt-right is kind of scared to talk about The Stark Truth. Not only that, because previously, I think whenever you associate to have a Jewish friend on your show, there's some anti-Semitism going on the alt-right where it's like, well, I don't want to listen to him. He might be Jewish. That's why he's having his Jewish friends on the show. And plus, it's true that even if you have guys on your show that are completely contradictory to the whole alt-right ideology, it's kind of strange. And you think like, you know, the Stark Truth is at least doing something different. And
even though we have a lot of followers, I noticed a lot of those different alt-right blogs, like, they don't want to talk about us.
Yeah, the one guy said you were a meshling during the Jim Goad interview or something, or they say there's some suspicion behind, you know, like, it's kind of secretive. I mean, it's just like, it says The Stark Truth, and then you see the city, Padlet Sky, and a bunch of lists from porn actors to, I'm thinking of Dick Smars Jr., to, internet guys. I like that interview. And, like, the one guy, Daryl, that one Asian Studies one, I really liked.
Daryl Hamamoto.
Yeah.
Professor at UC Davis.
I'm thinking of some other names right now, but I just can't recall the names. But I really like those shows because I find that they really stick to me. And I find the most interesting people through that, so... yeah, and what you're doing is an awesome show. I mean, you're exposing a lot of people to underground arts. So I've been on your book club, too. I bought, Beatnik Fascism and the other one by Venison about his book that he wanted for us.
Yeah, we don't have an official book club, but, like...
I buy every book you recommend.
And
follow every blog you do, like some cultish book club, and I just like it, you know. It's fun, and I actually expose to more stuff of this, and I actually find it interesting, you know.
Do you identify more with the alt-left than the alt-right now?
I kind of do associate as of right now. I mean, I've been flirting with the ideal. I've actually been... I have some written material, and I did have some Lulu files up last year, and I printed some of my journals and gave it out to friends, but at this point in time, I did write about something about the alt-left. I just haven't uploaded it online. This might be contradictory to Rabbit's theory of the online, or even some other guys who say they're alt-left, but my ideal was like three main points. I said that there was the trinity of Fs, meaning that the alt-left is about friends, family, freedom, that there's a denial of three passes, the denial of the French Revolution, the denial of the New Left School, and the denial of the ideal of egalitarianism. And I thought deeply about those things. I'm actually trying to put those things together in a very, I'm trying to be like Greg Johnson. I don't really try to role play as him, but I was like, you need someone in that part to really say something. It's sad because I was watching Fox News some time ago, a few weeks ago, and I think there was that loony, talk show host Greg Gutfeld or something, and he goes, well, there's the alt-right, but what about the alt-left? The alt-left is Black Lives Matter, and it's this. I'm like, wait a second, but that's not Rabbit's alt-left, or that's not the guys who are ex-alt-right or listen to Stark Truth. I'm like, oh, that's such an ugly use of the word. So you really have to define these things, and you have to make sure that it's defined to not fall into someone else's hands, just like now you're seeing with the alt-right, where people are calling each other cuck for no reason, where it's like, you can be a cuck for not writing the right kind of white people, or something really strange.
Well, I'll tell you this. I was talking about how smoking cigarettes is bad on the internet. Like, I don't think it's the worst thing ever, but, you know, I've smoked cigarettes. I've tried to quit. It's difficult. And I was saying, like, how I think we should work together to stop smoking because I think it's bad. And people started calling me a cuck.
Yeah. It's strange and unfortunate. Even somebody can be, I don't know. You could be cuck for any reason. And it's like these disgust people who show up even on the right stuff, and they're just, well, you're a cuck because, you know, I don't like you. I mean, I don't get into internet arguments. I tried to just make a disgust account under these alts, like, I won't say the names, but I was just usually trolling and asking peculiar questions. You might find some of them on Alternative Right, Colin Liddell's Alternative Right. And I flirted some questions with Alex Fontana and see what's up on that. But I don't know. You might find some interesting stuff. But other than that, I feel like I can't keep up with the disgust game, because other than that, it just seems like I'd rather be on YTMND, and or I'd be joking, or be on Ruby Caliber forums, or some kind of my posting career, or some geeky medium like that. So,
you've written a number of political essays. One of them is The Need for a Revolution Against Nepotism, and this was written in June of this year.
Yeah, that was actually during my summer meditation. Over the break, I was trying to do an internship for my school, and the internship wasn't go well. So I actually have a huge, fat, you know, book of these pretty much pages of my passions or something that I written. And I've only did 10 clips on this Mineo Maya fan club blog. And just to experiment with that, I mean, unfortunately, I didn't upload everything. It'll take some time. I mean, I could put the Lulu book up, but it's just raw material, so I might as well just put all the raw files on there. But that was during a time...
Oh, this is the one where you say, I propose an alt-left.
Yeah. And that was during my alt-left series of stuff. And I feel bad because you're really looking up cut-up stuff. You're really looking up papers of cut-up stuff where I go, feel free to copy and post anything, because I should upload everything on... And these are just some of my... But... I think I said friends, family, freedom, and that. And I think I said, but yeah, recently, on that for my politics, it goes in the same way where I'm talking about, you know, daily events or, I actually got on there. I quickly uploaded before this interview, the Radix essay I submitted last year.
I saw that.
A few years ago,
why I'm an identitarian.
Yeah, the why I'm identitarian thing. I wrote it under the name Steve Pronko, and it was.
Before I get to that, I do want to comment on one more thing. For your what you say, you propose an alt left. Mm-hmm. You say a left that denies the French Revolution, communism, and the Frankfurt School, but that being based on obtainment of friends, family, and freedom, it will be a racially aware. We're left, no equality or universalism, and no nepotism. Can you get into that more in detail?
I just use the word nepotism to kind of say, well, I guess people are based upon friendships, and what's really ruining, I guess, the established left today, if it's called, is this kind of normie culture that kind of is a ghost on everything. And nepotism... Even when we play games of bureaucracy and believe in Plato or Socrates or any of the silly Greek philosophies, white people tend to get caught up in this ideal that we belong in this universal kind of everyone's on top, everyone's the same, and everyone has an interesting voice. Well, that's pretty much based upon friendships and this silly, arrogant ideal about. And I just called the word nepotism. I just didn't have any word. Maybe I would change it to something else. But I find that the problem with the left is that, well, we're going to have a communist utopia. Everybody's going to be free. So I propose with the alt-left, there's some traditional things you can't break, like friends, family, freedom. We want friends. We want really close friends with us. We want a family. We want brothers, sisters, mother, father, and they have a good stable unit. And we want our freedom so we can have our Chinese girlfriends and listen to strange music and be eccentrics. And so, you know, there is that. It might have some little bourgeois nature to it, but it's not, it's something to worthwhile to fight for. I see this over time with even the leftists like Foucault or Derrida or, you know, those French people, even Deleuze, you know, with his whole the body's the machine and how they talk about this evil fascism. There's some kind of old paranoia to that old left I really don't like. And don't get me started, but I really do not like Zizek. I mean, some people will even say Zizek is some kind of alt-left figure, but it's just he's a fad and he's commercially approved. I mean, it's cool he supports Liebach and says that Leibach is actually quite the opposite, but really he's getting people into the alt-right. I think the alt-left has to start on year zero and maybe just take it with a grain of salt of the past, guys. And don't really take in the seriousness and degeneracy of, like, Louis Althusser, you know, killing his Jewish wife, even though that sounds kind of anti-Semitic, or, you know, some of these Samuel R. Delaney and the pedophile guy of, you know, some of these leftists, or even feminism, by the way. I just think, why should feminism be on the left to begin with? I don't even know. I think there's, why even put it on a side? Like, I think, like, that should be, talk it in your own, you know, world. I don't, you know, I really don't like it to be said. We don't need tension and conflict and pockets of things. There needs to be, someone has to be proud to be considered left-wing. Either we have a normie culture that has cultural Marxist values, or we have this Jacobin Party Social of Liberation established PhD leftist, which is so boring and kind of not fun. And then you have this hardcore punk left, which is super boring and cliche. And it's just, can't you just be like a normal, healthy person and fight for values that are good and healthy and doesn't, is not ugly?
Were you influenced by Rabbit's alt-left or like Robert Lindsay's alt-left?
Actually, when I was 15, I first read a book called Invasion by Crimethink. And that's kind of an anarchist collective out in the West Coast. And it's a book that tells a narrative how to steal things. And I found that really interesting when I was 15, because then I wanted to steal things. As I was at that age saying, I don't like the world. I wish I can cheat the system. And Invasion was really cool. And even their little booklet, Fighting for Our Lives, Days of War, Nights of Love, they have such interesting philosophy to it about how to live an anarchist lifestyle. They don't say anarchism. They say anarchist. And it sounded to me it was neither left-wing or right-wing. Now, I do believe on Keith Preston's Attack the System, he said some criticism about Crimethink. I'm not so sure which article. I don't mean to put words in his – but – The latest publication of work by Crimethink is very left-wing biased, and there's some kind of anti-white stuff in it, and it's just like, oh, what happened to the old Crimethink? And it's like, they say they're free and not make it, but they're hypocrites now. But I there is some deep sympathy of Crimethink in that nature, and I find maybe the alt-left can reestablish from that Crimethink behavior, maybe, but not be so decadent and destructive and crazy and madness, and actually be healthy families and good people, you know, not these, but.
You wrote this essay for Radix Journal back in 2015. Last year, they had this competition, the contest called, the title subject matter was Why I'm an Identitarian. And you wrote this fictional essay for them. Can you talk about this? Was this kind of a trolling?
Yes, it kind of was. I mean, at that time, I was doing an online class, and I was kind of bored. I felt kind of sad at the moment, and I was dating someone, and I was like, wow, maybe I can get into this whole Radix and finally be on the streamlight. So I was like, what's going to win this identitarian contest? And I thought, the most queerest piece possible. And that's what I think, Rich. And then there was some kind of trolling going. So I made up this altered ego called Steve Pronko. Pronko being some notable Asian studies academic. But the idea was to talk about identitarianism through the lens of, I'm angry because I don't like the alt-right, but still I associate with the group. And so I thought, there's half-truths in it, and there's just some that's fictional. So I kind of like that. So this character is pretty much saying that has an Asian fetish. Well, not exactly. I don't like using those words, but likes Asian women, but having, you know, first girlfriend, first girl to kiss, first girl to have sex with, which is kind of true in my own life. And, you know, having this desire that he's mad that the world, you know, Radix, there's this kind of, you know, Andy Nowicki noted this on Facebook. There's this fad called Aryan girl in the cornfield or something. And it's a joke on white nationalists that glorify white women as being this idyllic kind of white woman to chase after, you know. And there's like this even on
the
American
character in the essay, like, he has a lot of anger and revenge and sexual masochism. And he says, the character says that he wants to hurt the rich boys who ignored him and rape the blonde girls who refused to acknowledge him.
Yeah, I was actually reading some Yukio Mishima, and I was thinking about that where, there is some anger issues where I feel like I cannot be like them, but I cannot be like the bitchy feminist white girls where every white girl I meet is some bitch that doesn't want to be my friend. And because they have issues where I should, you know, like baseball or football or something geeky, you know, and, you know, it's like you can't be yourself, even though you're a normal, healthy person. And so, you know, there's that revenge fantasy in there. But there's also kind of the issue where I said at the end, you know, there's where are the problems in society? I said race, sex, you know, IQ, money. I tried to make this philosophical bend to it where it's like those are the taboos people do not want to talk about. And I am the character that represents all those taboos and represent that quintessential queer nature. The alt-right itself would be a queer party. However, it's becoming more mainstream. Do you associate with these very heteronormal identity Europa kind of guys going to college? Or do you associate with this kind of, I guess, queer culture, loser culture, and kind of just be as a punk music, as something of, you know, it, what is it exactly? And so I was kind of silly at the end. I said, read Jim Goad and Peter Sotos. And Peter Sotos is this kind of sadomasochistic child porn, like avant-garde cut-up literature. And I'm like, maybe just slide that in there so alt-right can read it. And Edward Lee, I think he's like a splatterpunk guy. He's kind of like Sotos, but from the 80s, and he writes about disgusting Ren and Stimpy-like horror pulps. And, you know, I was just trying to slide in some interest that maybe the alt-right could like instead of this whole nitsit squircle of, like, you know, like right stuff and, you know, other boring stuff, you know. At least you're on the alt-right, you're thinking, but, you know, don't try to be a normie about it. Hold on a second. I mean, yeah, so I was just writing that as this kind of experiment. I sent it in. I actually sent in two copies by accident, editing the first. I think Gregory Hood did look at that. I've never met Gregory Hood.
But... Oh, and then you ask all these questions.
Uh-huh.
Are you a racist skinhead? Are you a pedophile? Are you a mad scientist based on objective truth? Are you a corrupt politician? Or are you a cold-blooded serial killer? All these things are now associated with the right.
Yeah, 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 because, like, American History X and things of that nature that, you know, you can't be this ironic hipster in a hipster. I mean, it's like white people, we don't want to be sincere about things. So white people can only take things, well, he's rap music's, they're deliberately doing it on purpose. It's bad music on purpose. And that's the real genius. What if it's sincere? White people don't like that when music is sincere and they go crazy. Try to tell this to any like feminist girl and say, you know, he's not actually joking. He's really serious about these things. And they'll just go bananas and crazy on them. And so, you know, I was thinking of, you're Jewish if you pride anything unorthodox to the movement. Like, I was thinking about how there's that disgust form on the white, you know, right stuff, you know, that they say that, you know, the Spencer thing, whites must aggressively fight for an ethnicity of some kind, you know. I'm totally on Greg Johnson's ideal that there's this kind of Israeli Theodor Herzl dream that's kind of autistic, and it's just, I don't know. I think that ethnostate is basically called suburban Philadelphia. Yeah, you know, it's like the upper class gated communities, you know. I don't know. It seems like a Marxist criticism there, because the Marxists criticize nationalists as saying they just want to protect the bourgeois. And so it's kind of weird that you would be the, you know, not understand the, but yeah, I try to be semi-offensive with the whole, you know, why can't we call black people's niggers? Why can't we have sexual desires for children? There's the Sotos thing in there.
Why? Wait, can you explain more about who Sotos was? I'm not that familiar with him.
Peter Sotos was Jim Goad. He's in the connection with Jim Goad. He was this kind of avant-garde punk guy from Chicago. He, in 1984, he published a very controversial punk zine called Pure. In the second issue, there was child pornography on the front cover. This got him arrested, but at the same time, his reputation went up. However, he was very alt-right. He talked about his fetishization and love for Nazis killing people, for the sake to cause shock, but for the sake to delve into these things, understand why. He also talked about serial killers. Nine Bandit books sold Tool, Mine, and Selfish Little. I think they still have Selfish Little. I would recommend anyone getting that book, Selfish Little. But today, Sotos is kind of known for being the lyric writer and somewhat singer in the mid-90s for White House. White House is a very influential noise band, and I loved White House during high school. Even though I didn't know what White House was, I listened to the rip-off bands like Rotten Noise and maybe to some extent Anal Cunt. But White Noise, yeah, I mean, Wriggle Like a Fucking Eel, that song is really interesting. I mean, it's just, even to some extent, their art is associated with Trevor Brown, who's this Canadian, Japanese, he lives in Japan with his Japanese wife, and he draws, you know, child porn, did some art for Venetian Snares, and Colin Liddell, I think, is a big fan of that.
Oh, are you talking about, like, the hentai or Lolly Con stuff?
Yeah, yeah, and I'm trying to make some alt-right connections. Like, Liddell, actually, is a fan of Trevor Brown. He has an old article about that, and Trevor Brown did art for White House, and White House is Peter Sotos. But, yeah, some of new Peter Sotos' work is really refined, and to this day, his art is very controversial. But there is this kind of Larry Clark, Tulsa Kids, Harmony Korine, Gummo kind of style, cultural anthropology, street culture in it that kind of takes Jack Kerouac to a whole new level where the reader is experiencing these things which are like the alt-right, child pornography in written narrative, but it's just,
well, it's interesting with that issue you bring up with pornography is like their art has kind of been used as like a loophole because you have all these photographers like David Hamilton and Jock Sturgis who do like underage girls in their photography, and because it's art, like their stuff is totally legal.
Yep, and the reader can subliminally masturbate to it and kind of get off on it. Peter Sotos had said in Selfish Little that he did his solo album Buyer's Market to say, well, he can actually masturbate to it. I don't know. You know, it's really hard to tell if Sotos is real or not. I think he has an alter ego, too, and I think he does have this kind of fictional character to him. I don't know. I think he did work in a gay club in Chicago, and he might be gay. I'm not so sure. But there is this kind of art person to him, which seems kind of very eccentric. I mean, he has one YouTube video online of being at the Pompidou in France, and his one friend is Dennis Cooper, who does the same kind of avant-garde style of writing. And it's just fascinating that in some way, if Nine Bandit Books publishes alt-right stuff, his best-selling thing is Peter Sotos, and there must be some cult following to that. And so I guess I was trying to put in Sotos in my own writing and saying, there's that Soto-esque, angry Jim Goad kind of style, rebellious, you know, destroy everything nature to it. So, yeah.
Read Greg's essay, West Coast White Nationalism.
Yeah, yes, yes. And it's funny because I have my, you know, my, yeah, that's interesting because I think the best book for that is Stuff White People Likes, which Greg Johnson really likes too, Christian Lander's book, that really covers the interest of what these kind of right kind of white people like against these wrong kind of wrong people, you know, wrong kind of white people. And it's this
and the alt left kind of breaks down that whole kind of barrier.
Yeah, where you're kind of these eccentric whites where you don't want to be the right, this petty bourgeois or wrong, or have this Plato, Socrates, Aristotle, Greek history. You know, you don't have to be connected to that. You don't have to say, well, I'm European and I'm doing this, la-di-da-di. Yeah, I'm going to digress here, but
you don't have to join like a group. You can create your own identity, and then yeah, if your identity has an appeal, other people will sign up with that.
Yeah, I mean, I'll use this book for example. I learned this on Alternative Right. There was a book called The Birth of Prudence by this guy named Ryan Andrew. I don't know where he came from, but he's associated with Be Dare. And I was really excited at first. I'm like, wow, a white student that has an Asian girlfriend. Yes, that sounds like my life. I was really into it. I got the book. The book had a lot of typos. And then it was all like, dump your Asian girlfriend in favor of Western civilization. It was so boring. And so I always thought it was kind of, I don't mean to be this kind of rude or anything, but it seemed to me that Andrew is making the argument for tragedy that supposedly the main character, Prudence, and I forget the main guy, is basically incompatible because it's a tragedy that you won't bring in Western civilization.
Can you talk about like your concept of Asian Aryanism?
Yes, and that's kind of what I was going to bring about. I've been working on this theory since of last year, and I plan to write a book on it. And I'm going to it's called Asian Aryanism. And it's a lack of a better term. It's something I just pulled out of the hat, and it just makes sense. Very provocative. It's funny. You know, when I first started college, I was an Asian studies major. And to be honest, that's when my sexuality awakened. Kind of like coming out of the closet, realizing you're gay or something. And it turns out, since I was really young, I was secretly in love with Asian girls. The Chinese, Japanese, Korean, Filipina, those kind of girls. And it's like,
I know some people are like Japanophiles. Do you have like one particular culture you're fascinated with, or just all of Asia?
I like all of Asia. I mean, I have more success with Chinese girls. I could go on digression, but I feel like Japanese are, I met two Japanese in my life.
You've only met two Japanese people in your entire life?
Yeah, two. I knew these two girls because to be honest, there's more Chinese and I've been more associated. So I don't want to say exactly Japanese. I mean, probably on the West Coast, you get a lot of Japanese, but in this area. But talking on that, one of the girls, I'll say her name was Ami, and she had a white dad and Japanese mother, and she was super beautiful, and she wanted to be a model. We had hugs, Chromecast and cuddle. I was over her house. This is when I was really young and still in Asian studies. I was like, and this is kind of when I was still naive, but a part of my awakening. And then I met this other Japanese-American girl named Skylar. Oh, and she was like this kind of, I'm Japanese, I'm pretty, free hugs, yay. This kind of, I guess I had a weird, but then there were actually some other Japanese girls who were just good friends. But I'm only talking about the Japanese girls I have had relationships with, Ami and Scott. I'm not talking about, I've seen Japanese girls, and they're very nice and very kind. I mean, even my Japanese teachers and Japanese students. But I'm only talking about, but mostly I've been having relationships with mostly Chinese girls and one Korean girl. And I added Filipino because there was one Filipino girl and she was super nice. But I had relationships with that. But going back on topic, I just ignored them because I thought white girls were some irrational thought that I thought, you know, maybe be an interest that maybe I'll find the right white girl at the time and she'll be a good person. You know, I didn't think in terms of race. I just thought, why can't I get a good person? When reality, it turns out that the white girls I was always dating with were always these decadent, like bitchy, feminist, man haters. Let's go to the bar, drink beer. They want to be like bro and talk philosophy and just imitate their beta male and all this. I love philosophy.
But what's your deal with Plato and Aristotle and Socrates and this
I'm actually on this. I just feel that an autistic libertarian, like I'm just using the fasci goy, the counter signals to fasci goys. I feel that there's this perversion and love for the three cores, Plato, Socrates, Aristotle. There seems to be this love in Western civilization for those three icons, and they seem to be over with again and show out again. I mean, even in Nietzsche would argue that there was some wrong with Aristotle's logic, thinking, you know, you might hear the right stuff. Not all are like that. This kind of silly postmodern kind of style of, but I mean, there's nothing wrong with them per se. It's just that there's a perversion of these characters. It's this kind of autistic.
So are you okay? So, are you sort of coming at this from the, this idealism, like the man sort of crafting himself to be the ideal European man, like a statue of David? Are you sort of criticizing that in a way?
Yeah, that might be true. I mean, it seems to me that in the Western thought, which there's nothing wrong with it, it seems to me that you have to be this creative genius and you have to be this scientist, or you have to, well, I don't know anything. You know, it's this kind of arrogant, I'm above all that. And it's this pathological altruism seething through in early of our culture. It seems to think we're the center of the universe. And every philosophy major that goes into philosophy, what's their favorite icon? Socrates. What's their favorite? Plato. You know, it's more like Plato, but it's
just, more just for the dilettantism, like just sort of the image of them rather than seriously understanding their ideas.
Yes, yes.
I mean, because, you know, I'm going to come at this from the perspective of, I think that these people, for, you know, those of us in a Western milieu, they are our foundation. But yes, you might be an Eastern guy, you know.
Well, that's actually where I was coming from, because to be honest, you could like Confucius or Tao or some of the old, even some of the stuff in the Bible where you can say Jesus Christ is a figure and have a religious fever for that forever, you know. But it seems to me that the new religion is Plato, Socrates, Aristotle. It seems to me this atheist, or even Shakespeare. Oh, I think Shakespeare is its own power monger, which I think is way worse than, it seems to me Shakespeare is the lover of Western civilization, but he wants to admit he's an atheist. There's a good book out by Nine Banded Books by William Forty Hands, where he talks about how Shakespeare, he's not real. He's kind of like just this figment of our imagination, and he's just a collective name, William Shakespeare, and rather represents the collective of Western people and their interest. And, you know, people worship Shakespeare like this god, like this classical Jesus. Now, in classical deconstruction, especially from Paul de Man, would argue that there's, you know, this love for the character, or this love that, was William Shakespeare really a god, or is he just a collective of people, or just a guy? You know, we have to consider, in classical deconstruction sense, you have to consider these things. Though I will also argue, ironically, that deconstruction is now kind of evil, where it deconstructs for the sake of, I don't like you, or something. They'll deconstruct because they're a naughty right-wing guy.
You've traveled to Japan. Can you talk about your experience there?
I was actually at my university, and it was kind of, I was in my dorm most of the time. You see, I think study abroad programs are kind of this, they're kind of this, you stay in your little room and you do all this. Yeah. And if you go outside the shell, I mean, then, you know, you have to go out with at least other few Japanese or something like that in order to talk to the world. I mean, the same thing you could do for any state college, where you're in this different city and you have to go outside, but especially different in this other countries. And I've experienced something, but mostly I experienced it with manga and anime, just like every other Western person. And because that was the only way to really read hiragana, and so it was mostly reading Japanese children's shows like Anpanman and stuff like that, and learning what, you know, it's completely unknown to the Western tongue, and just understanding it in a way through that interest. So, it's interesting. But for now, when I enjoy my Japanese interest, I'll sometimes go to New York City and go to the Japanese bookstore there, or there's the Mitsuwa Japanese Mall in New Jersey. That's a very good place too.
Yeah, there's Japantowns in both LA and San Francisco.
Yeah, but in Philadelphia, there's more of a Chinatown. And kind of, I always joke like this, the Japanese are really the Asian Jews. They like
The Koreans are.
Koreans are too. Okay, yeah, I can understand that. But I always find the Japanese, I jokingly refer as Asian Jews, is because they're so elite. They think they're the center of the universe. And they, you know, unlike the Chinese, which are there and they're abundant, Japanese seem to run our culture everywhere we go. I mean, there's this kind of Asian studies thing that goes about, you might hear this, but it's the ideal that when you study Asian studies, you're not talking about the Japanese because that's prejudice. You should also not be so inclusive. You should talk more about the Chinese, because the Chinese have the working class, and they're everywhere, the Chinese. Unlike the Japanese, which seem to run a few animes, and then Western white boys get into it, and they want to have a Japanese girlfriend. And they want
waifu.
And they want to live out their Japanese lifestyles. But they completely ignore the culture of China and Korea. And they don't seem that. And it's kind of this silly, you might hear this from a feminist argument. And it's interesting, but, you know, I always feel, one of my jokes is I always feel like the Japanese, they're kind of elite, and they love to be elite. And the white people they choose, they have to be some level of elitist. When the Chinese will choose anyone. Chinese will choose anyone. And I feel that there is some interest in that. It's just interesting to talk about that. That's already talked about in Asian studies. But going back on Asian Aryanism, right? I really don't like the word Asian fetishism, because it sounds like a mental illness. I think yellow fever is a little softer, and it's an okay term. But for a long time, you know, I never liked white girls, unfortunately. You know, you might call me a race traitor or even a cuck.
Are you talking about their physical appearance, or more just their culture and attitude?
The culture and attitude, and I will say this, sometimes the physical appearance, when you go to those Italian neighborhoods with the big, stupid Amy Schumer cheeks and, you know, they're fat.
Amy Schumer is a Jew.
okay, yeah, that makes sense. I'm being naughty here. I really don't. I mean, look, I'm tired of the white girls I meet. They're silly. They're either. I mean, I can understand the nice white girls, but even then, they're the ditzy blondes. And the bright white girls are this Lilith creature that tries to imitate men all the time. And they're kind of like Devlin's prophecy, where they you know, they dress up in. They like hardcore punk, and they get tattoos, and they're all about talking, and, you know, it's so geeky and stupid, and you've already lived out. I mean, some people like that.
Okay, just keep going. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
What do you think about the sort of the identity of people of a mixed backgrounds, like a Hapa backgrounds?
Yeah, I was actually going to talk about that. Like I said, if I had a choice between a white hardcore girl and a Chinese girl, I'd choose the Chinese girl. They're more about the structure of the family. Not about preference, but look, I guess most of my guy friends all have Chinese girlfriends, and this is the white male Asian female. They call it WMAF. And I felt like I belonged to that class of people, or where I felt some kind of harmony. And, you know, white guys are so hostile to each other today. I think it's kind of sad, you know, that they gotta be, everyone's a, you know, but, you know, I feel that there's a relationship in the white male Asian female club of people I hang out with. And, you know, at that time when I wasn't aware of these things, I put my blinder on and I said, you know, Asian females don't matter, until I realize it does matter, because Asian females just make better lovers. They make better, they're just better people to hang out with. And basically, the whole Asian Aryanism thing I'm trying to develop is really just trying to make sense of that. It's basically like not being afraid to have an Asian girlfriend. Like, I understand that the white nationalist community these days have problems with the white male Asian female. And I know about the Hapa Reddit thing. The Hapa Reddit, they have this whole, like, stuff your Asian people like. And they basically argue that
there's this blogger called Stuff Your Asian Males Don't Like. Yeah. And there's this, he's really like depressed and angry at his parents.
Well, that's women, you know, women who come from an Asian background and a European background, it's, you know, they're a lot of men are attracted to these women. I think you even said that on the, you know, graphs of attractiveness, most people in that's the kind of woman most people, men of all races, are attracted to. But I think that for men who are European and Asian, life can somewhat be a bit problematic. And I think someone like Elliot Rodgers, I don't think there's a problem with it. You know, I know people that are half European and half Asian that are great people, male and female. But I also think that there can be a problem that can come from a mixed racial background. I mean, even I can relate to this in a way. I don't really think that my background is as tangible. I don't really think it's like a tangible thing. It's just, it's a weirder thing. You know, if someone is like partially Ashkenazim and like, you know, Alpine, Mediterranean or whatever, you know, they sort of, they just look like a pan-European white person in a lot of ways. Whereas if someone is Korean and Nordic, you know, they, you can tell that they're mixed race. And I mean, most, that's fine. A lot of these people, you know, probably are fine, but there can be a problem in life that can come from having a mixed race perspective where you, feel as if you have nowhere to turn to. And I think someone like Elliot Rodger, solidifies that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I know that there's insecure Mishima-esque sons, but there's, you know, you also develop crazy tiger moms through that, and I completely understand that dysfunction, and that's probably the main reason why it's not okay to do that. But, you know, I've been writing about the situation, and, you know, I'd like to elaborate to some kind of Asian Aryanism to make sense of the white nationalists that love Asian culture, you know, because you have to understand, too, that Asian Aryanism is radical. You know, because the Hapa Reddit scene hates it as the opponent, you know, white nationalism hates it too. And especially white feminists hate Asian Aryanism too, because it assumes that, you know, Asian girls are better than white girls, which unfortunately I believe. And, you know, so Asian Aryanism is pretty much a direct attack on everything that would can be considered, you know, all right. But it's, you know, I would think it's some alt-left position is because simply it's based upon the proximity of friends, family, freedom. And but at the same time, I understand that, you know, being back on, I know some, you know, Asian white dad, Asian mom, you know, byproducts and offsprings. Yes, I understand that they fail in the game of sexual, but at the same time, you have to put in this Jack Donovan Mishima-esque kind of ideal of getting stronger. And here's my theory. I think Yukio Mishima will become more of a loved icon. I love Mishima. It's probably one of the reasons why I took Asian studies.
We just did a show on him.
Yeah, I love that. I love that show. I actually wrote a lot about Mishima on the fact, and I think Mishima in some respects could work in an ironic sense of giving confidence to these white male, you know, Asian mom characters. They can get, you know, confident and marry themselves either a white girl or marry themselves another Hapa girl or even Chinese. Because look, you know, it's this strange, whites will hang out with whites, Asians will hang out with Asians, but then there'll be this class of white males going out with the Asian girls. But someone has to produce it. Say if you produce a male and your Asian Aryan offspring, it's got to have the surname and got to promote its culture somehow. You can't let the culture die out in other Chinese. Otherwise, there won't be some kind of Asian Aryanism going
on. So you're trying to...
These groups form their kind of own cultures and...
You're trying to
groups.
Make your own race, in a way. You're trying
exactly,
to,
like a lot of leftists advocate abolishing race. I mean, one example is Mexicans are like Spaniards and Aztecs, but today they view themselves as their own distinct ethnic group.
Yeah, I mean, whatchamacallit? Yeah, it's funny because you either have the choice between white culture, Asian culture, new race. But it seems like this new race is always some liberal cosmopolitan society made up by white people to begin with in the first place. So really, I think you're both. And to be both, you have to make this synergy between this one label. But not exactly this, right? Because it's like more associating. For now, it's associating with the white label. Because I feel as though that you have the characteristics of white interest, but you have the mind of your white dad, but the body of your white mother. And so you have this kind of world where that makes sense. And so it's a way that, you know,
the mind of your white dad and body of your Asian mother?
I'm just saying, I'm just saying the mind of Western Civ, the body of your white mom, because, you know, white, let's use the bar of the phrase from Sam Hyde, that he said that Chinese, the Asians look like insect people or some kind of ugly turtle fish people, H.P. Lovecraft. You know, it's funny. That's always kind of the hit on Asians, is that they're this kind of, and I understand that. But at the same time, if you're dealt with that and you're kind of in that, there should be this I'm just thinking a mile a minute here. I think it's funny that Asian women, if you're like white dad, Asian mom, you come out as a girl, it's probably the most cherished woman on the face of the earth. I think like white male, Asian female, like a woman is basically the most graceful, beautiful creature on this planet. It's just like one of those, along with some other races, but it's just one of those things which it's kind of chased after. And it's unfortunately that the white Asian boys will be this Yukio Mishima and they'll have to suffer through it and they'll have to contemplate. But in return, I think that the boys will become these hardcore philosophers, not grounded from their white roots or something like, well, no, I mean, not to be like some anti-white, but some like the roots of what I was saying before. You don't have this love for Plato because you have this love for Asian culture, but you have the integrity of Western civ and science and creation. While the women are these beautiful creatures, obedient, subservient for the family and innovation for Western civ, where I find that it's interesting, but I like to think of it like this. It seems to me that in the HAPA board, they talk about these things being, you know, racist. Well, that's racist. Why would you ever want your half child to be white? That, you know, well, the word racist just means healthy, normal white person. It's kind of, let me give you a quote from this Asian woman who wrote on her Facebook. She's married to her Czech boyfriend, or maybe Slovenian, and it says Joyce Wang, and she says, "I like white men because innately I'm racist. White men represent physical strength, good genetics, socio-influence advancement, global socioeconomic status, alpha males. Who won't love them? Again, I admit this is entirely racist. We are brought up to think that white males are the superior ones that rule the world. In fact, they did and still do. Another reason is just they look better to me. Large eyes and baby faces make girls go gaga. They are more open-minded and supportive in women's success and independence. No criticism, no hindrance, new limitation. Honestly, I feel bad for feeling this way. I wish men in my race is more supportive, tolerant, more strong in themselves." Here again, we have this kind of, you know, the man is Mishima, the woman is this obedient. And I think there's some subtle Asian Aryanism going on. The HAPA board's just gawk and awe, but that's terrible. In fact, it's funny, they're in their whole list of people who are their enemies are basically everything that is a good reason for Asian Aryanism. Where are their enemies? Margaret Cho and Tila, what's her name?
Tila Tequila.
Tila Win.
We had her on our show.
I
mean, well, maybe about Margaret Cho. I think Margaret Cho really likes Jim Goad, but I don't know.
She does. She interviewed him for a Thought Catalog.
Yeah. So there's that. They don't like things, and you'll find some other cases on the HAPA Reddit. Oh, the senator says he hates Asians, but he loves Asian women. And so I think the enemy of the HAPA Reddit scene is Asian Aryanism, and it's the thing I'm trying to develop where I'm trying to say, pro-white is good if you're half Asian, and you should struggle, and you should be for it. And so it's basically the concept of, you know, it's she's unapologetic, you know, this person unapologetically loves her white man, and you can still be pro-white and have an Asian wife or girlfriend and produce healthy Asian white children. The boy would just have to embrace Yukio Mishima and Western dedication. You know, here's another funny thing. Imagine if they start sending people to Mars. You know, will they send all the Harvard graduates and their no-speak-English Chinese girlfriends? Now, I'm sure it would create some kind of HAPA, new people would worship Yukio Mishima as these kind of gods, and then these boys get all angry, and, how can I end this? Hopefully, I think people will take pride in that, the Asian Aryanism, sort of, you know. But here's the most important part. I think that there's no deny. I think there's a problem right now with this whole Asian Aryanism thing. The problem is that there's a lot of white male Asian female couples, and the white males, in pure definition, are cucks. basically, they don't want to admit and see that their girlfriend's Asian. I go up to a white male and Asian girlfriend. Oh, that's a nice girlfriend you have. Well, no, I just date her because of her personality. It's all situational. There's no reason. And they do this all the time. It seems to me that white males know white. You made that choice because you know white girls are fucking retarded. Sorry, retarded to begin with. Well, so you,
I mean,
yes.
Okay, so I'm going to interject here and offer you an interesting counterpoint. And I think this will be interesting, maybe worth doing. I relate to you in a lot of ways because I feel like I was like you when I was younger. And I don't really think like this anymore. Not to throw what you're saying out of the window, but I was involved with Asian women when I was younger and relate to a lot of what you're saying, but it seemed like my mind kind of got out of that.
Oh, yeah. Definitely, I can see definitely there be a growing out of it. I mean,
so there's parts of me that thinks like maybe I should go back and try to have a Chinese wife, a Vietnamese wife, or something like that, or I don't want to get too personal, but then there's part of me also that thinks like. You know, even for me, I don't think I have a mixed identity. I feel like I am a white person, but there still is this thing of like other people will give me this shit. Like the Jew thing will be thrown at me. It doesn't come from within. It's thrown at me. And I just sort of think like, you know, there's plenty of, race mixing guy. I'm not against this sort of stuff. But for me personally, it seemed like that was a phase I was in when I was younger. It was like a part of my sexual development, and it kind of like left me.
Oh yeah, I can definitely see some, definitely experience. You know, who's to say that this is the final conclusion or final?
Sure, I don't mean to do that, but I just want to throw this in there just because I relate to you in a lot of ways.
Yeah, yeah.
Just about being part of this group of guys is. When I was in school, I noticed that all the guys that I hung out with, you know, I'm going to be 27 soon. When I was younger, maybe around even your age, we played noise music and a lot of guys had Asian girlfriends. And I relate to you and think it was a sort of class of guys who we weren't really the jocks, but we weren't nerds. We're sort of cool guys and sort of confident, but weird. And I've noticed these guys also kind of having white girlfriends now as they've gotten old. I don't mean to throw some kind of weird wrench, but Pilliter, I do want to get your feedback on that idea of what I just said.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I definitely think it's cultural, and it's definitely there is a scene. And I was just talking about that, you know, the people I see them. It's funny because white males, Asian females will have a certain culture and a certain interesting, you know, it seems like they're in the professional classes, but as you said, they're in the those classes too of funk music. Thinking of which, I think it's funny, I saw Zuzu a couple of weeks ago, Jamie Stewart. He has this kind of semi-alt neo-folk. He had a soundtrack about Twin Peaks. And what's his gig? Well, he says he's queer, but he always has an Asian girlfriend on the side of his band. And I think that, you know, he also likes Peter Sotos too, according to Wikipedia. And, you know, it's funny because it's actually telling this white coast hipster, he's making hitting on Korean drums and making this kind of neo-folk music. And he has like a Korean girlfriend or something like that. And, you know, it's making all these little, you know, white West Coast kids jealous because, like, dang, I wish I had a Asian girlfriend and living out that same narrative he is. But, you know, it's infectious. Because another thing I like to talk about is that Asian Aryanism is also in medium from children's shows and cartoons. You might say it's the work of some conniving Jew, but, you know, kids' shows like I noticed on Nickelodeon Make It Pop. And on Disney Bizarre Vark, they're telling young kids to have yellow fever.
Pilliter, it was great to have you on the show.
Thanks you very much, Robert. Thank you too, Alex.
Thank you. Great to talk to you.
Thanks.
And Pill Eater, you're going to be back for a future show. We'll be continuing a lot of these topics and talking about your music.
Yes, yes. I'm also a musician, and I record under the names Pizza Dog Studio, King Trode, and PSO119. I'm trying to find that band there, but it's very strange electronic music. You can find it out on SoundCloud and YouTube by looking up those titles. But yeah, I make very funny electronic music. Should listen to it.